Imagine your home, your office, everything powered purely by the clean, boundless energy of the wind and sun. It sounds like the future we've all been promised, doesn't it? But here's the crucial, often invisible challenge. What does it actually take to keep the lights on, stable and humming, every single second, when our entire energy grid shifts from massive, predictable power plants to these often intermittent natural forces? Welcome to the Deep Drive. Today, we're cutting through the noise and jargon to give you a true shortcut to being well-informed on a topic that's truly at the sharp edge of modern energy. Our mission is to pull back the curtain on Energinet's ambitious roadmap, their bold plan to achieve real-time grid stability control by 2035. You're going to walk away with a crystal-clear understanding of what's happening behind the scenes, how these invisible forces are tamed, and what it all means for the future of your power supply. So let's unpack this. At its heart, the challenge for any transmission system operator, or TSO, like Energinet, is managing a grid with rapidly increasing levels of renewable energy, especially those like wind and solar, which are what we call inverter-based resources, or IBRs. They behave fundamentally differently from traditional power plants. It's a bit like swapping out a heavily predictable diesel engine for a super-efficient but lighter electric motor in a high-performance car. The TSO has to evolve quickly to handle that difference.
That analogy of the car engine is spot on. What's absolutely fascinating here is just how fundamentally different today's inverter-dominated grid operates compared to the past. Think of it like this. Traditionally, our power grids relied on massive spinning generators, you know, like coal or nuclear plants. They provided something called inertia.
Inertia, right? That physical momentum.
Exactly. Imagine a huge, heavy flywheel. Once it's spinning, it takes a lot of force to stop it or speed it up. That's inertia for a power grid. It gives the system a kind of built-in resistance to sudden changes in frequency. When a big power plant trips offline, that inertia acts like a shock absorber, giving grid operators precious seconds to react. These old plants also inherently offered consistent, easy-to-manage voltage and what's called reactive power, which is essential for pushing electricity across distances.
Okay, so that was the old way. Steady, predictable.
Pretty much. But now, you've got wind farms, solar arrays, and even those big high-voltage direct current links, HVDC lines. They're clean, they're flexible, but they don't inherently provide that same kind of physical inertia. Or fault current. That's the immediate surge of power that helps protection systems detect problems. So this means grid stability isn't a passive byproduct anymore. It needs to be actively managed in entirely new, much more sophisticated ways.
And right now, Energinet, like many TSOs, is essentially navigating this complex new landscape with tools built for the old world. Is that fair to say?
That's a fair assessment, yes. They're relying on slow, offline studies to assess stability, and often they're leaning on neighboring countries to jump in with reserve power if things get, well, dicey.
It sounds like a bit of a high wire act, doesn't it? This gap, you know, limited real-time visibility, those slow studies, and relying on external help clearly falls short of what the leading TSOs around the world are already deploying. So what's the real risk here if they don't adapt? What could actually happen?
The risk is profound. Without these advanced real-time capabilities, we're not just talking about minor hiccups. We're talking about scenarios where voltage across a city could suddenly collapse, or frequency could swing so wildly damages equipment, or uncontrolled power oscillations could ripple across the system, leading to widespread cascading outages.
Okay, so potentially major disruptions.
It's the core of maintaining reliability in an increasingly complex system.
So given these immense challenges, how does a TSO like Energinet even begin to future-proof their operations?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have a grand vision, a North Star they're aiming for? I hear they're calling it a guardian angel of sorts.
Exactly. Energinet envisions this kind of stability dashboard akin to a guardian angel, a real-time system that not only shows operators exactly what's happening, but also recommends the precise actions needed to maintain stability. And they're tackling this monumental shift through three distinct phases, each building on the last.
Okay, let's look at phase one then. That's 2025 to 2027. This is all about foundational pilots and what they call no regret steps. My understanding is they're essentially laying the groundwork with tools that are useful no matter what. What are some of those quick wins?
That's right. One major quick win is bringing PMU-based wide area monitoring systems, or WAMS, right into the control room.
WAMS. Okay.
Think of it like this. Traditional grid monitoring, called SCADA, gives you a snapshot of the grid every few seconds useful, but like looking at still photos.
Right.
PMUs, or phasor measurement units, provide high-resolution, time-synchronized data up to 50 samples per second. That's like upgrading from those still photos to a high-definition, slow-motion video of the grid's dynamics.
Wow, okay. Big difference.
A huge difference. WAMS takes that raw PMU data and presents real-time visibility of critical stability margins like voltage levels, frequency, and crucially, if any power oscillations are building up, complete with automated alerts.
So instead of reacting to something after it's happened, they can see it starting to happen.
Yeah.
Like in real time.
Precisely. They're also developing a dynamic security assessment or DSA prototype. These are faster advisory tools that run in parallel to operations, giving operators simple green-yellowed status updates on stability margins maybe every 15 to 30 minutes. It's an early warning system.
And what about existing hardware? Are they bringing older tech or maybe existing tech into this new vision?
Absolutely. They'll fully integrate existing synchronous condensers into daily operations. These are essentially massive motors spinning without a load, providing that crucial inertia we talked about earlier.
Right, the spinning mass.
And also dynamic reactive power and fault current. They're incredibly valuable for stabilizing the grid. A key part of this phase is also upgrading their training simulator to connect to near real-time system snapshots. This allows operators to relive actual grid disturbances and practice complex dynamic scenarios in a safe, realistic environment. It's like flight simulation for grid operators.
That's smart. It makes perfect sense. And how are they ensuring this isn't just a tech project that fades away, but actually becomes a lasting change?
Good question. They're establishing a formal WAMPAC that's Wide Area Monitoring, Protection, and Control Task Force. It's a crucial first step towards creating a permanent, dedicated unit focused on dynamic stability.
WAMPAC Task Force.
And we've seen this pay off elsewhere, you know, like the UK's Visor project, which clearly demonstrated the value of PMU dashboards for system operators.
That brings us nicely to phase two, running from 2028 to 2035. This sounds like the big push where these pilots scale up to full production grade systems.
It is. This phase involves complete WAMS deployment across key substations, integrating online or maybe hybrid DSA directly into the energy management system, the EMS.
So it's becoming part of the core operational tools.
Exactly. It's about moving from advisory tools to integrated live control systems. This phase also brings automated controls, like coordinated voltage control systems and wide area oscillation damping controls, essentially getting the grid to actively heal itself in some ways.
And how does this impact their reliance on neighbors? That seemed like a key vulnerability earlier.
A huge focus in phase two is on self-reliance. EnergyNet aims to reduce its dependency on external reserves by significantly increasing its procurement of local inertia and fast frequency response services.
Right.
Yes. They'll modernize protection systems to handle the unique challenges of low short circuit conditions in a renewable heavy grid. And crucially, the WAMPAC function will become a permanent fixture, potentially with a dedicated stability desk right there in the control room.
A stability desk. That really signals a shift. And then looking even further ahead, beyond 2035, into phase three, from 2036 to 2045. EnergyNet is preparing for what sounds like the ultimate renewable grid, anticipating periods of near zero synchronous generation. What kind of technologies are we talking about then?
This is truly looking into the crystal ball of grid operations. We're talking about AI-powered predictive stability management, maybe autonomous grid controls where the system can largely manage itself in real time, and advanced protection systems designed specifically for a 100% IBR grid.
Wow.
If we zoom out for a moment, this entire phased approach isn't just about applying new tech. It's about building a robust, flexible foundation for continuous improvement, no matter how the grid evolves in the decades to come.
So it's about adaptability.
Exactly. It's about creating a grid that can adapt to any future energy mix.
Okay, so we've covered the phases of the timeline, but here's where it really gets fascinating for me. What are the specific tools and capabilities EnergyNet is going to implement to achieve this true control? Let's dive into the core pillars that will make this guardian angel system a reality.
Absolutely. The first pillar is all about seeing the invisible through PMU WAMS and online dynamic security assessment. The fundamental need here, as we touched on, is for speed and detail.
More than just those snapshots every few seconds from SCADA.
Way more. Imagine you're driving a race car and your dashboard only updates every 5 seconds. You'd be driving blind in a fast-moving, high-stakes environment. That's what traditional SCADA can feel like for operators trying to catch fast-moving grid events.
So PMUs are like upgrading to that high-definition, real-time video feed.
Precisely. WAMS then takes that raw high-resolution PMU data and turns it into immediate actionable information. This means real-time angle monitoring, like showing phase angle differences between, say, West Denmark and Germany, indicating how much stress is on those interconnecting lines. It allows for continuous oscillation detection, instantly alarming if the natural damping of power swings drops below a critical level, maybe 5% or so.
Catching problems before they escalate.
Yes. They can also see voltage stability indices, showing exactly how close a region is to voltage collapse as a clear margin percentage, and get frequency dashboards that show the rate of change of frequency, or ROCOF, at multiple locations critical for detecting sudden frequency drops.
That's a huge leap in visibility. Do we have real-world examples of how impactful this has been for other TSOs?
Absolutely. Statnett in Norway, a real leader in this space, found that power oscillation monitoring was considered the most useful WAMS application by their operators. Very valuable. And National Grid ESO in the UK even detected an oscillation back in 2016 that was completely invisible to their older SCADA system, precisely because of PMUs. This isn't just theoretical. It's proven technology catching otherwise hidden dangers.
Okay, so WAMS gives the visibility. What about the online DSA, the Digital Stability Advisor? Why online?
Well, because traditional offline studies are just too slow for a grid that's constantly changing with renewable generation, minute by minute sometimes. EnergyNet will use a hybrid online DSA.
Hybrid, what does that mean?
It means it combines different approaches. Think of it as a super fast specialized simulation engine. It combines rapid targeted simulations running scenarios like the sudden loss of a key HVDC link using simplified models and parallel computing to deliver results in minutes, not hours.
Okay, faster simulations.
Yeah.
But it's not just simulations, right? It's also using live data.
Correct. It combines those simulations with measurement-based analytics, using live PMU data to instantly assess stability. For example, detecting voltage instability from a local Thevenin index, which is basically a real-time measure of how strong the local grid is. The goal is actionable insights. The DSA will continuously display something like stability limits versus current operating point. So an operator might see transient stability limit, 1,200 mW export to Germany, current 1,100 mW.
So it immediately tells them their safety margin.
Exactly. But this raises an important question. How do you present such complex simulation results in a simple, intuitive way for operators who need to make split-second decisions?
Yeah, you don't want them wading through complex charts in an emergency.
No way. It's about distilling all that data into clear, secure, marginal, insecure statuses, or simple, easily digestible scores. Keep it simple. Keep it actionable.
That leads perfectly into our second pillar, active stabilization through coordinated voltage and oscillation damping. As those big traditional generators decline, voltage stability and managing reactive power. You described it like water pressure earlier, right?
Yes, that's a good analogy. It's crucial for pushing electricity across distances. It becomes much harder. What's the problem with individual devices trying to solve this on their own?
Do they just sort of fight each other?
They can actually fight each other or hit their limits prematurely, like trying to adjust water pressure in a house by having every faucet turn on and off independently. It becomes inefficient, even counterproductive. The solution is coordinated voltage control. This is a centralized secondary voltage control system that optimizes how synchronous condensers, STATCOMs, those are fast electronic devices for reactive power, and HVDC links share and manage reactive power across an entire region.
So it's like a conductor for the orchestra of reactive power devices.
That's a great way to put it. Countries like Italy and France have actually used this kind of centralized secondary voltage control since the 1980s and 90s, so it's not a brand new concept, but it's newly critical.
And how does this help those synchronous condensers we mentioned?
It ensures they're optimized. By coordinating them with static compensation like capacitors, you make sure the syncons have their full dynamic range available for when it's truly needed for those sudden events. And don't forget those big HVDC links like the Cobra Cable or Viking Link. They can also provide critical voltage and frequency support through droop control, automatically adjusting their power flow based on grid frequency or voltage. Very useful tools.
Okay, so that's coordinating voltage.
Yeah.
What about actively damping oscillations? WAMS detects them, but how do you stop them?
Right. That's where wide area oscillation damping, or WDC, comes in. WAMS detects those oscillations, but WADETC actively counteracts them. The actuators here are incredibly powerful. Those HVDC links are fantastic for damping by rapidly changing power flow.
Because they can push or pull power very quickly.
Precisely. And other FACTS devices, like SVC static VAR compensators, can also be quickly modulated. Statnett in Norway, for instance, added a WAPOD, a Wide Area Power Oscillation Damping Controller, to an SVC way back in 2011. It used remote PMU signals to significantly improve damping across their system. Proven tech.
So this is really interesting. You don't necessarily have to overhaul every single asset on the grid. You can overlay an additional intelligent layer of control on a few strategic devices. That's a truly elegant solution.
It is. It's about smart control, not just brute force. Now, for the third pillar, and this is truly the unsung hero, the last line of defense or protection modernization.
The systems that actually trip the breakers when something goes wrong.
Exactly. The fundamental problem with renewables here is that traditional protection systems, like distance relays that detect faults on power lines, rely on high fault currents and a clear direction of current from those big synchronous machines.
And since inverter-based resources like wind and solar don't provide that same big kick of fault current.
They provide limited fault current, sometimes a very different type of current response, making it much harder for those traditional relays to detect and clear faults quickly or accurately. Imagine trying to find a needle in a haystack, but the needle isn't very magnetic and the hay is barely moving.
Makes it tough.
Very tough. So EnergyNet needs adaptive solutions. They plan to use line current differential protection, which compares currents at both ends of a line. This scheme is highly effective and largely immune to the IBR issues because it doesn't rely solely on high fault currents.
Okay, that's one solution. What else?
They'll also improve existing distance relays by upgrading algorithms to handle low current conditions and use better directional elements. And then there's adaptive protection schemes.
That sounds intriguing. How does that work?
It is pretty cool. Think of it like your car's traction control system. It senses road conditions, wet, icy, dry, and automatically adjusts how the engine delivers power to prevent skids. Adaptive protection does something similar for the grid. Relays could change their settings based on real-time system conditions. For example, switching to a more sensitive setting group when the grid is in low inertia mode, essentially, when it's more fragile and needs faster reaction.
So the protection adapts to the grid state.
Correct. They'll also implement system integrity protection schemes, or SIPS. These are wide area remedial action schemes that act faster than humans for extreme events, like automatically shedding a precise amount of load based on a dangerously fast frequency decay, that Rokoff value.
Pre-programmed emergency actions.
Exactly. And new grid code requirements will mandate that large IBRs have grid forming capability or specific fault current contribution, so they actively help stabilize the grid rather than just passively connecting, making them part of the solution.
What's truly fascinating here is that protection, often unseen by the public, is the ultimate guardian of the grid's integrity. Ensuring it works reliably in this transformed grid isn't just a technical detail. It's absolutely non-negotiable for system security.
It's the difference between a minor blip and potentially a massive blackout. Absolutely critical.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? It means a grid that's not just greener, but stronger and more resilient than ever before. But as you alluded to earlier, technology alone isn't enough, is it?
Not at all.
It's also about people, market design, and truly preparing for an uncertain future.
Exactly. EnergyNet aims to build significant internal muscle by reducing its dependency on neighbors for reserves. This means increasing domestic procurement of fast frequency response, or FFR, from sources like batteries or flexible industrial loads.
Bringing those reserve capabilities closer to home.
Precisely. But it sounds straightforward to just buy more reserves domestically. What's the real economic or regulatory hurdle in doing that? Are there unseen market dynamics at play that make this internal muscle building tougher than it sounds?
That's a great question. Because it's not just that they procure, but how they procure it, right? What mechanisms are they looking at?
Absolutely. They're exploring dedicated inertia markets and mechanisms similar to what National Grid ESO in the UK is doing with their Stability Pathfinder project.
Where they actually pay just for the inertia capability.
Yes, contracting synchronous condensers purely for their stabilizing capabilities, separating that value from just energy production. They also plan to ensure internal black start units and sufficient grid forming capability from new resources so Denmark can recover from outages independently. Self-sufficiency is key.
Yeah, the human touch is crucial. Training and workforce development. You mentioned they're upgrading their training simulator. How will that really impact the operators day-to-day or maybe crisis to crisis?
It's a game changer. EnergyNet will upgrade its training simulator to use actual network models and near-real-time system snapshots. This isn't just about practicing routine operations. It allows operators to relive actual grid disturbances.
Relive them.
Yes, and practice complex dynamic scenarios like frequency dips or oscillations in a safe, completely realistic environment. Imagine if pilots could refly any challenging incident that ever happened, safely on the ground. That's the kind of capability we're talking about.
That must significantly improve readiness and, frankly, confidence.
It does. 50Hertz in Germany, for instance, is expanding its virtual substation simulator for all substations, greatly improving operational readiness. This is backed by continuous learning, like quarterly stability drills and integrated exercises with Nordic neighbors. Looking at this holistically, this human element is absolutely crucial. The best tools are useless if operators don't trust them, don't know how to use them effectively, or haven't practiced with them under pressure.
Totally agree. And finally, there's a significant cultural shift happening. We touched on the Wampak teams and governance earlier. Sounds like this roadmap isn't just about launching projects, but truly embedding stability thinking into EnergyNet's daily operations. What does that mean for the organization itself? How does that change things internally?
It means establishing a permanent cross-disciplinary Wampak team within system operations. This isn't a temporary task force anymore. It's a dedicated group that will manage new tools, conduct deeper analysis, and provide expert advice to the control room 24/7. It also means defining crystal clear roles and responsibilities for dynamic stability, breaking down those old silos between planning, operations, and IT. Everyone needs to understand their role in this new world.
So it's about making sure everyone is on the same page, pulling in the same direction, with a clear mandate from the top.
Precisely. Securing an explicit executive leadership and board mandate is key, making dynamic stability a core operational requirement, putting it right up there with the absolute reliability requirement of N1 security. This fosters a culture of proactivity where operators and engineers don't just react, but proactively use these new tools and are encouraged to think about what could go wrong dynamically before it happens.
Anticipating issues rather than just responding.
Exactly. And TSOs like StatNet and FinGrid have already successfully moved WAMs from a project to a core operational function. Demonstrating this cultural shift is entirely achievable. It can be done.
This is truly about more than just technology. It's about a fundamental shift in how the entire organization thinks about and manages the grid, transforming it from a perhaps more reactive system to a highly adaptive, intelligent one. So what does all this mean? It means a grid that's not just greener, but stronger and more resilient than ever before. And importantly, EnergyNet's roadmap isn't some wild experiment. It's grounded in proven practices from other leading TSOs, right?
Absolutely. We've mentioned StatNet for WAMs and WEDC, FinGrid for inertia monitoring and fast frequency response, National Grid ESO for those innovative inertia markets and synchronous condensers, and 50Hertz for their advanced digitalization and use of syncons. These aren't just ideas on paper. They're working solutions out there in the real world.
So there's a track record.
There is. And while implementing such a complex roadmap certainly has its risks, technical, operational, financial, cybersecurity, you name it. EnergyNet has clear mitigation strategies in place. Things like rigorous testing, phased training, strong governance. It's about building confidence every step of the way.
Ultimately, it's about empowering the incredibly skilled people who keep our lights on with the cutting-edge tools and knowledge to manage complex physics in real time. It's about moving from simply reacting to the grid's challenges to truly understanding and shaping its behavior.
You know, the future grid won't just be reacting to the physics of renewables. It will be proactively shaping those physics, turning the inherent variability of nature, the wind and the sun, into a constant, controlled, and resilient flow of power.
That's a powerful thought.
It is. This isn't just about keeping the lights on, though that's paramount. It's about cementing Denmark's energy security and its leadership in the global green energy era.
It's truly incredible to think about the hidden complexity and ingenuity behind something we take for granted every single day, like the electricity powering your home right now. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the future of grid stability. We hope you'll continue exploring the unseen forces that power our world.